You could go out and buy a lottery ticket or go bet on the horses or something, but to bet on a startup, you better make sure you're eligible or accredited.
Before we dive in, I want to share something with you. Now, these are brands I actually use in my own life. They aren't sponsors yet, but I believe in what they represent. If you're the kind of person who listens to T-Pow Labs or The Picture of Wealth, chances are you're already dialed into a few of these. But in case you're not, I have a few creative brand mentions. InvestMed. We talk a lot about smart investing here. InvestMed is one of those companies that thinks long-term, exactly the kind of mindset we want to explore on this show. Now, InvestMed is a private medical or executive physical company. Now, I will leave it at that, but look into it. Thank you, Grant Lawrence, for coming on The Picture of Wealth. Today, you are what we say, co-founder, Valhalla Private Capital, and a founding member of the Valhalla Angels for the Kelowna chapter. Is that an appropriate intro?
Yeah, and also the Vancouver side, where we have two chapters in BC. So perfect.
Okay.
Glad to be here, Dustin.
This is not a motorcycle group. This is Angel Investment Group, which I've been a part, and you trained a great session a few weeks ago, and now we're here. So I come very fresh with curiosity and naivety for the angel investing space. And so I'm going to lean on you today for helping myself and helping the listenership wade into an area that I've been in the finance industry for 20 years and always thought angel investing was something for major affluent individuals and not for the common person. But I think I had that wrong, and I hope to uncover that today for people. And maybe the industry is shifting. Maybe the listeners or the market of people who do investing is shifting for, I'm curious about different things than my grandma's dividend portfolio. So here we are. Thank you for being here, and give us a little background. So what is Angels? What is angel investing, or the chapter, if you got a Cole's Notes to get us warmed up?
Long, long time ago, initially, angels were referred to the people that were helping to support the funding of theater shows.
Mm.
So way, way back before movies were getting popular, and they expected a return. It wasn't just here's philanthropy and I'm going to give you some money. There's probably some of that involved with that. And it then became adopted into the tech space as well. So we've seen different versions of this on TV, Shark's Tank, Dragon's Den, but it's all angels. And those angels have different ways in which they're going to execute their investment and their investment thesis. So you're going to have, I'd say, you have the average angel, then you're going to have the high net worth angels, and there's something called ultra high net worth angels, which are, okay, you own the oil field in Abu Dhabi, or you got lots and lots of money coming your way. And so I'm probably in the first group, where the government of Canada, and it very much echoes what the US has, is defined, you are an accredited investor. And that accredited investor, there's choices to pick from when you sign paperwork to buy an investment shares in a startup, where it's a private company. So it's not publicly traded, and they offer letters A through L or A through M to say, yes, I'm accredited. And you pick one of those, or and then you go forward. So the most common ones are you're earning $220K a year for the past couple of years, or you've got assets outside of your house that are worth more than $1 million. And you can do it with your spouse or partners. So there's all these different combinations. All that said is the government wants to make sure they think because you make a lot of money that you're smart enough to make these investments, basically. And that you're also saying, yes, I understand this is a startup, it's a high risk, my money may not come back. They then instituted probably 5 or 6, maybe 7 years ago with COVID, it's a little bit hard with the timelines, but the eligible investors, and that's more provincially run. So an eligible investor is somebody who's making 75K a year or more for a couple of years. And there's, again, there's all selection options. And then the provinces say they can invest X thousands of dollars out of their annual earnings in these high risk startups. Yeah, I've yet to see the government go and check if you're actually following the rules. Like you're signing away and they go, oh, are you actually accredited? Or are you actually eligible? I think Alberta is the first one to also say you're eligible to invest in these the startups if you've got a degree. So if you've got a four-year university degree, so
right.
they try to encourage, hey, you may not have a lot of money, but that degree equates to some intelligence to be able to make decisions on making those investments. So it's odd. You could go out and buy a lottery ticket or go bet on the horses or something, but to bet on a startup, you better make sure you're eligible or accredited a little bit.
It does. Yeah. If you're going to like bet or take, you say lottery or gambling and you're into that stuff, then there's probably a field of competence you have in something that you could take an educated guess at something and find a piece of your portfolio that you thought, if this goes to zero, then I'm going to be annoyed, but it's not going to affect my groceries being put on the table.
Exactly. And that's where it comes to how much of your portfolio do you want to put in this asset class? Is it 2%? Is it 20%? That's one of the important things for you to gauge. Okay, if I've got 10K that's sitting around, am I going to use half of that to put in this asset class? Or if I have 100,000 sitting around that I want to invest, do I put 20K into this asset class? It really depends on what your financial situation is, what your threshold is for new and exciting, and also could be new and painful. Right?
Is there a correlation between, so you see founders and angel investors, is there a correlation between the amount of money a person invests and the correlation to the positive first investment they made? If they made a bad first investment, they usually are like out, or is it more, let's try again, let's try again? What do you see in the space?
Yeah, so I see our recommendation, of course, is to look for the pattern recognition, get enough experience with the investments coming in that you may not write a check for. So take some time to see that experience, some due diligence, talking to lots of founders, working with other investors that have experience, and then decide to write that check. If you get burnt the first time, you may go, ooh, that was hard. I'm going to take a backseat here and study more and then come back and do it. However, if it works out really well the first time, you're going to, oh my gosh, that was really cool. I'm going to be addicted. But the approach we like to suggest is, and is most common, is do a portfolio. You're going to invest in 10 or 12. You may invest one or two a year or three or four a year, depending on your cash flow, your time and availability, and who you're doing the deals with, other angels that have expertise in areas that you probably don't. And then once you get up to that portfolio, you're going to have somewhere around 18 to 25% IRR is what we're seeing. So
some are going to go for shit and some are going to go good, but then it evens out to about that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Seven may just die or become zombies. One may just be a super home run, and a couple others may give you your money back plus some additional. We get two times the money invested or three times the money invested.
What's a zombie?
Okay. Yeah, it's not the latest movies, but it's when a company doesn't go bankrupt and it's just lumping along. So it's not returning money to you, but you can't write it off because it hasn't closed its doors.
Right.
So it could be the founders decided, okay, this is now, we'll call it a lifestyle company. It's not a venture which just taken off. It's like, hey, you're making a great salary. You're paying your employees some good money, but you've not given back anything to the investors and you're not too concerned about it. Oh no, they're a zombie. Somebody's making 100K a year in their own salary and they're still lumping along, but they're not that dream of, hey, you're going to make 500 million here and we're going to get $1 million. No. So you got the zombies that are unfortunate. They're just, okay, just stop it and stop the company so we can write off my investment.
That's a threat. What other threats are there in the pond of alligators for angel investing?
I would say, because you're looking for startups that have two to three or more founders, you know, 2 to 3 is probably ideal, because we all recognize that a single founder doing all the jobs is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to have two or three that probably have different expertise. You may complement each other. You may rub shoulders and fight each other's with opinions, but okay, those are good. You're pushing back. It's good to make me think harder, and then we'll come to a conclusion and move forward. So if you only have one founder, that can be a real headache. Everything's relying on one person's shoulders. If you have two or three, you've spread that out. You've got more team. But the divorce rate in marriage is, what, 50%? So in startups, it's probably a little bit higher. So if the founders divorce, it's actually worse, I've been told, than a marriage divorce. It's really hard. So if you can see what the clarity is on how people make decisions, how they divided up the company, if founders have not decided to reward each other a third, or you're getting 50% because you started it, you're the brains, and we'll take 25% each, and then one leaves and they walked away with 25%, so now it's dead shares. Nobody's doing anything about the shares. So now that company becomes harder to invest in, because the shareholders, the prospective investors, are going to say, there's all these shares of people that aren't operational. You need to get some of that back. So that can create a problem, other than the three founders at each other's necks if they don't, you know, work together well and their things don't go as planned, or they say, hey, let's pivot over here to this solution. Say, no, I want to do this way. So you have divergence desires and dreams that when they come across, hey, the market's actually to the left by two steps and we were going straight, we need to adjust. And they said, no, it's to the right by two steps. So yeah. You can get into all sorts of challenges. And given the fact that one or two out of 10 are going to succeed, and probably that means the other eight or seven are challenging, you're going to come across them. It could be for all different reasons. COVID killed one of the companies I was in, just totally shut it down. That was just like no fault of the founders, good team. There was a pipeline was growing. And it was just like, okay, that's a write-off. No, a black swan event out of our control.
Yeah. So I'll set something up and you can help us sift through it, because I've been through your course. I know you've got the kind of your 12 things you look for. But so the essence of the space is you've got a company that's a startup. It's got an idea. It might have a little bit of clients or building something. It doesn't really have clients yet. So it's got some excitement. It's got something new. AI is big right now, but it could be anything. They come to a person like you and they say, hey, here's our proposal. We are looking to raise $1 million from somebody, and we will take that million and we're going to inject it into the business, and we're going to grow your investment of $1 million 10x or whatever they project to say. What is your like quick and dirty? I like it. You go look at real estate, you're driving around, you have your little flags that are like, I don't want to look at this anymore. What are your flags when it comes to the angels, the company, the industry? Lay it out for us, how you do a quick assessment.
Yeah, certainly. So what you're really getting into, Dustin, is what's my thesis and where's a sweet spot that I like to look at. So if there are companies that are overseas, I typically discount them right away. I'm probably not
if they're overseas, is that what you said?
Yeah, okay. They're overseas. Like, so I've had people reaching out from the UK this week. Here's our startup. We'd like you to take a look at it. Like, oh, I can't really justify unless I had people in the UK that I know I could trust. Go find this. We had that situation 2 years ago. It was a startup out of California. Well, one of the friends of Valhalla Angels is a gentleman that lives an hour away from that startup, and he was pretty keen on it. I think actually he probably brought it to us.
Right.
So that was really good. So we have a local person that can go and see and talk to the founders, even though the founders are very good at doing webinars. So one is location. Two for me is what type of revenue are they looking at or generating today? What's the source of that revenue? So is it direct to consumer? So I'm not keen on those ones. I'm more the enterprise and B2B software sales and hardware sales. So I'd like to see that type of business. And then it's also, what is the customer in that B2B, or is it business to government? I'm not keen on business to government, even though that's a growing, it's a big space, or business to selling to municipalities, so a smaller government or universities. So those types of revenue sources don't excite me. They're long, they're complex. The good thing is when you're in, you're probably in for many years of renewals of whatever you're selling, right? So those are two things that immediately come up to mind. And then if it's a long gestation period before they can get to massive revenue, so it's a medical device, well, that could be 2 years, could be 5 years. Is it a medical molecule? They got multiple trials to go through. So am I willing to wait around for 6, 7 years before they can get it to market? So there's that for me is probably two of the things that I won't touch. There are others. We've had medical devices come through the Valhalla Angels and they've been successful, but I just don't tend to touch it. So those are some of the things right away that, and I'd love to see a little bit more impact because I'm voting with my dollars on as to what is going to be ideally come to life in the world. And so is there something there that's positive as an impact that can make things better for the environment, for people, for whatever it is that I'm looking at, land, water, etc., land, water, air, and the flora and fauna. So how's it helping us, right?
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point that I see in not so much our clients who are 60 plus where they're set. We've got a portfolio that's running and it's stable. They understand it. They've been in it for 20 years. They know the drill. It's my double dentist family that are under 40 or at 40 that are going, hey, we've got our savings plan is going good, but we're looking for something a little more interesting and we're willing to take better, more risks. And if our plan that we've set up in the low and slow goes half as good, we'll be fine. And so there's this two things, which is wanting to invest as peers. So friendship is like, hey, let's do this. So you have that and then investing. And this is where you brought it up is where you're interested in, like, where are you interested in? Maybe there's a shareholder meeting in somewhere of a ski resort, or I don't know what the startup is, but it's okay. That's, I want to be part of that ecosystem. What do you see in the real world? Am I dreaming all this or is it how it is?
A couple things to unpack there. One is going back, Dustin, to your, this is just meant for really wealthy people. As we said before, there's accredited and eligible. And then what check size are you writing? So the check size is dependent a little upon what the founders are asking for. Hey, we've got a minimum check size because it does cost them money to process that with legal fees, etc. So I'm tending to write 5 to 10K checks as a first in to the founders and then see what they do over the next 12 to 18 months. And if they're successful, knowing that now the valuation's higher if they're looking for more money. So then I'll write a bigger check as a follow-on check. So that's my process now. Instead of a big check up front and then go, oh, I'm hoping. I'm willing to say, okay, here's a little check with multiple other people. And then let's see what you did with that. Even though I've missed the growth with a bigger check, I've also have reduced the risk, so to speak, of the downside. So the types of companies. So the Angel Summit is going on right now in Kelowna. And so we've got companies that are doing therapeutics. We've got one that's doing pet food that's out of Vernon, and they're doing a human grade pet food. So that's very cool. And supplements. So it's about how to keep your pet healthy and ideally live longer. We've got a company that's on the ski hills to track, hey, here's a tag that goes on your kid and you can now track them down the hill. You don't need a cell phone because they're not working up there. So there's a wide variety of technology there that you can look at and see which ones are exciting for you and which ones you want to dive into and which ones that there's others that you may be able to ask questions about. For the ski hill one, I don't know how many others you could ask questions. What other technologies like that? It's the cell phone or it's this thing?
Right.
The ski hills. Right.
Yeah, it's definitely very interesting. I know we saw a VR home kind of thing the other day, and I took your advice of wait 6 months. When you get excited and you're into it, try to wait 6 months. And it's quite difficult to actually do that because I think maybe you are more immune to seeing innovative things and very cool things. And you've also seen your money go to zero and you have to tell your accountant, hey, that's a write-off. I'm writing that one off. And it isn't a write-off. It's a permanent capital loss is what it would be. So that's not fun. So that might dumb down the excitement of seeing cool stuff and really get down to the extra layers of vetting. How can I skew this risk in my favor to make a good decision and consistently make good decisions and learn from each one so that they get better. Again, you explained your drive-by initial analysis. Yeah. Is there a next layer outside of meeting as a group and vetting it that you would look at companies?
Yeah. So now, so if you've got your thesis down on here's the sector I like, or the type of companies I like, here's the stage that I like, they're just at the idea stage, there's nothing developed, or I like it when they've got something that's close to the product called a minimal viable product, so an MVP. It's not what the mass customer target is going to be buying, but it's close enough that early adopters will buy and go, yeah, that's really cool, it looks good, and you're going to add to it or change it a little bit. So that's the MVP. And then the next stage is really looking at, is there a perfect fit now for your product? So it's referred to as product market fit. So the product's finished, it always looks like it's always orange and this big and does ABC for you. And now it can be flying off the shelves, or it can be off the internet as a downloadable software, or it's a cloud solution or what have you. And then now it's the scaling stage. Okay, you're going to scale local, regional, provincial, North America, geographical, however that scaling looks. So what stage do you want to? And each stage is being de-risked, which theoretically means your multiplier of returns is being reduced as well. Mm-hmm. So at the very early stage, highest risk, if it looks like it's a good team, good market, good product, you like it as your thesis, then you're looking for a ride that's going to go much higher, right? And as you get later in stage, you're going to go, okay, I'm going to buy a dividend stock, right? It's going to give me 3, 5, 7% a year versus, hey, this one's going to do 5x, right? Theory. It may go to zero.
Maybe. So I will share some experiences. So I am in the Angel Summit and I am going through the vetting process of these companies. And one of my own personal bias is we're a low and slow business that has gone along for 20 years. We make a little bit of profit. We upgrade our website. We make a little profit. We upgrade our office. Like, it's been so low and slow compared to when you see these companies and they say, we've raised, so here's the setup. We have zero revenue. We've got a good idea where we have a product. So you're like, okay. And we've raised to date $2 million. Our valuation then was 3 or 5. And now our valuation's 8. And we're trying to raise another million. The just pulling out of midair the valuation. What's the tech understanding of those valuations? And how can I get unbiased?
Yeah. So if they've got revenue, then there's a little bit easier to say, okay, yeah, here's a basis for valuation, because you're going to look for other companies that are comparables in the industry. Mm-hmm. Okay. This company is doing X, they're worth 20 million and you're half of that. So you're worth maybe 10 million, or you don't have the same combination of distribution and the customer base is slightly different and your team setup is slightly different, your go-to-market and pricing. So there's lots of variables definitely to include in there. But you're also looking at it from your investment can increase. So if you're expecting, say, a 10x in a company and it's going to be over a 5-year period, so you're going to go, okay, if I invest at this stage, do I believe that company in 5 years is going to be 10 times this valuation? So you think, oh yeah, they're worth 10 million today. That's what they're promoting. Excuse me. So in this word, forget about pre and post money. When money comes in, you add that money to the 10 million. So now they're worth 11 million.
Right.
So if you're going to say, okay, after they've raised the million, they're worth 11. And in 5 years, I want to see 10x. So that means they have to be 110 million capital. Do I think that they're actually going to be able to build to that? And if you say, no, they're not, I think they're only going to build to half of that, then you can either step away or you say, hey, I don't think your valuation's right, because you're not going to make your 10x.
Right.
So that's one way to look at it. And that's almost the VC model. So the venture capitalists, they have a fund that connects, invest in companies, but they have to also give back that money, because it's not their money, it's other investors. Mm-hmm. So they have to give back that money in 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, whatever the length of that fund is. Hey, we've got a fund, we're raising $20 million to invest in 20 companies, $1 million each. And the fund is good for 7 years. So at the 7 years, they've got to give the money back to the people that wrote checks to them to invest that money.
Right.
So they have to do that sort of math. I was just doing that. They have to almost work backwards. Okay, we want this type of return. What does that mean the valuation has to be today? So on the flip side of, okay, we think somebody's come to you and said the average pre-revenue valuation of a company in Canada, that's a tech company, let's say it's a SaaS, a software company, is somewhere between $1.2 and $1.5, $1.6 million. So if they're over that, what can they tell you that means that they're actually can justify a $2 million valuation or a $3 million valuation? And that's where you go, oh, these guys have already done this three times. They've already had successful exits. Okay, I believe you. And then you go, okay, and who's on your cap table? Oh, Bill Gates invested in you? Oh my gosh. Okay, tell me more. Or your first customer. We've had a company come through and their first customer was Amazon. How did you land Amazon with eight people? What are you doing that's so unique that Amazon's using it across their whole network? So it's looking for those nuggets of traction and then deciding whether you believe in their story. You assume the market's big enough to support the growth, right? If they don't have lots and lots of customers, then you go, okay, this is not going to grow very much. But once that checkbox is there, then you can go and look at their team, their tech, their successes in the past. And you're trying to evaluate how will this team overcome the hurdles? Because everybody shows a smooth ride. It's not a smooth ride, right?
Yeah. Is there a resource place to find past tech companies that it like documented their journey and showed how much they went for when they sold? Because again, with my own bias, I'm looking at it and I probably can't imagine certain things getting to certain levels if I haven't seen other companies do it. So when you like a SaaS thing, I don't come from SaaS. I come from a recurring revenue model from fees, but it's not the same where, no, you don't understand the scale here. If these guys could get Amazon or they could get every education school in the world on it, or 2% of them, they would be worth $100 million. That would be helpful. So is there a place to train my brain to not believe or believe what's being shown to me?
So is there somewhere you can validate that this market opportunity is actually as big as it is, right?
Yeah, or a past case studies of, Microsoft started as a small thing too, and this is how it got to a bajillion.
So there's definitely data aggregators that report on that. There's CB, so Charlie Baker Insights.
Okay.
So CB Insights, there's PitchBook, there's DealRoom. All three of those are just some of the sources. And they all sell services, so they can be expensive, but you can go and try them out. They also, I get CB Insights probably three times a week from them, and PitchBook's almost daily. And it's reporting on the state of the nation, and sometimes there's a deep dive report in something, and very often they'll go, here's the free executive summary. If you want more, then you have to license it. But not in those situations, those ones also have databases. You go, okay, tell me about company ABC. What have been their past rounds, their past raises? And they've got statistics that they've been collecting on them. And very often they've got the startups in there as well to say, these are non-public companies, which they have tons of. And what did they raise? When did they raise? What's their revenue? So it's all available for you. If it's a really early startup with no revenue, they're not going to be in there unless it's a founder that's already been there, done that. And they go, oh, we got to follow Peter over here because he's done it, and Shirley's over here and she's done this before and had success, so we'll follow their company. So they've announced they're starting a new company. So those three sites are good for that. Beta Kit out of Vancouver does a pretty good job on reporting as well, and that's just a subscription, comes out, I think it's weekly, and so I get that one as well. I read through that because that's talking specifically about the Canadian market and what's happening, and also the policies that are the government's doing that might affect the way investments are handled. So
do you think that we're on a positive uptrend for angel investment, or is it dictated by founders, dictated by the economy? What dictates?
Yeah. So COVID killed it for a while.
Ah, okay.
And we saw overvaluations as COVID came in. Like the valuations that we're seeing, go, how did you come up with that valuation?
Right.
Then the valuation started to come down, but then we saw interest rates go up. So now founders are competing with other ways in which people can make money. If mm-hmm. interest rates are high, I had unsolicited requests for second mortgages. Hey, we can pay 15% on a second mortgage. Okay, and how long is it? Oh, it's just a year. Okay, well, that's different than
decent. Yeah.
You know, and it's secured against a structure. Now you got to go look into all the details of that second mortgage. So that, with the highest interest rates, that really put people on the sideline or moving money in, angels and high net worth individuals moving money into other assets because they can say, okay, make some money over here. But again, it comes back to your investment thesis. Hey, I want to invest in impact stuff that's going to impact the agriculture industry. I'm not going to even look at the real estate side of things. I'm just going to look at how can I help improve food production in Canada, right? Or the healthiness of our food that's coming out. So, and then if I say, okay, 20% of my money is going into that, and then the other 80% that I've got to invest, I'll look at second mortgages. So keeping within your guide rails would be good. I've had a few really smart people that go, yeah, I put aside this amount of money to invest each year. And you know what? I've invested it by Q1. So now the rest of the year, I'm sitting around watching. Because I'm not going to go a dip into the a year ahead of me. I'm waiting till the next year to start reinvesting. Mm-hmm. So it's just their discipline that they've decided.
Yeah, I think that's well, and there's a whole emergence of, and again, listener, this is not buy or sell advice that we're talking about today. This is just entertainment and education. But there are, I see more, and maybe it's in my sort of ethos now that I'm thinking about it, but like Front Funder and Hive websites where there's like a bit of a secondary kind of market for things. You're blind, you're buying. That's why I like the Angel Summit ethos and the Valhalla kind of approach of, hey, come hang out with some other people who have been doing this for a long time. And if you invest, great. If you don't, we will still welcome you to learn and ship you on your way to further education. But you brought up a good point. And I didn't tell you I was going to ask you about this, but so don't panic. Okay. You are a guy who we've met before. I noticed that you are quite fit and keep yourself healthy and want to, is there a connection between that and what you're saying about your own thesis of like food production and the investment philosophy of making people healthier or better? What's going on in your own personal program?
Yeah. So I did play sports at university and I thought, okay, now I'm out, what am I going to do? Cause I love food. So I thought, okay, I better get into a program myself that took 90, 100 days to get the body to the point. If you don't do it, you miss it. So now it's just a standard procedure for me. And we also did a lot. My sister's a naturopath. So, you know, she's always sending me articles on our food supply and healthy articles. So we decided to really, if we can, buy organic and grow as much of our own food as possible and watch processed food. There's all that normal stuff, like reduce sugar, reduce caffeine per se. So moderation and less processed. So that's basically what we've been trying to do. In terms of how that's impacted my investment thesis, I haven't really gone and said, okay, ag tech's my space, but there's a couple folks within our angel group that I can call and say, what do you think of this? This is a new way for fertilization to happen in the garden, or it's a way to get rid of pests, or it's how do they increase the yield, or how do they measure the yield? So there's those ones which I'll bring forward to other people that are smarter than me that know ag tech and go, okay, yeah, and that's the benefit of an angel group is, my background is software B2B sales. So somebody wants to ask about that, great. But I'm not a medtech guy. However, I'm on a group of people, three of us that are helping a medtech company out. So there's a CPA, there's myself, enterprise software. And then the third guy is a gentleman who was an emergency doctor. And so the three of us, I can listen to his questions. I can listen to the CPA's questions and go, okay, that's a good way. You caught that. I wouldn't have caught that.
Yeah.
So it's good to have that cross talent, so to speak. And that's what you get out of an angel group as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to bookend it and say there is this mastermind thing. I literally was just meeting a guy and we talked about mastermind groups. There is the beauty of a mastermind group in investing. So thank you, Grant, for your insights today on the show. Where can people find more information about Valhalla online?
Oh, yeah, sure. So the website is valhallaprivatecap.com. So CAP instead of fully spelled out as capital, valhallaprivatecap.com. That's where you can learn more about the angel group. Or if you're a founder wanting to raise, you can go there and click on raise capital. And then you can apply and that'll come into our inboxes for that. Or I'm on LinkedIn, Grant Lawrence. It'll be pretty easy to find me. I don't think there's a lot of Grant Lawrences in
Florida. Right on, Grant. I sincerely appreciate our time and your insight today.
Oh, you're very welcome, Dustin. Happy to help out. And if there's any follow-on session you want to do and dive into something, glad to be of service. And I hope this does resound with your listeners and watchers.
They will for sure. Thank you.